Good morning.
I'm glad to be here always, and it's wonderful to be with each one of you. Today I want to talk to you about a message that I've entitled, The Best Place to Be. And I think each one of us has that idea in our minds where we like to go to physically or mentally. I know that a physical place that I discovered when I took this particular position was this trail back here. It does something to cleanse my mind. There's also a feeling that I get here that I've sort of been here before, and I'm still trying to work that out and feel what that means. But anyway, it's very refreshing and wonderful, and it's something that I like to avail myself of, especially during this time that's particularly challenging in my life. The beauty about the place, the best place to be for you and for me, is that it is extremely personal. We think that holy moments can only happen in places like churches or sanctuaries or temples, places that are designated as such. But I've seen some holy things happen in bars. I've seen them happen on a street corner. And I've seen some very unholy and very ugly things happen within the walls of what are called churches and other places of worship. You see, it has to do with the mindset predominantly of the people that inhabit the place. And I found that in unity and science of mind and Christian science and metaphysics in general, that we approach God and transformation and change in a very positive, open way for our growth. And I love that approach. I have believed in it for more than 40 years. And I think that the affirmative way, the positive way, the one that looks on the bright side is the right way, because it ultimately feels better. Which brings me to a point in this talk that I want to make very early on. Where we are in our minds at any given time is only a part of where we are physically. We may be here at a restaurant, at home, we may be present there, but we're bringing an accumulated idea or ideas, accumulated ideas about what we are, who we are, and what this place may represent, and what may threaten me about it or what might give me joy to it, and we're missing sometimes what's right in front of us. I'll give you an example. I don't like to go to the dentist. Nobody does, but I particularly don't like it. And I go into the place, and it may be beautiful, but I'm so full of trepidation about what may happen and this needle and that procedure and how much it's going to cost. My mind is already saturated with the past. So I'm not present fully to what's going on in front of me. The secretary who may comment about something that I'm interested in, or vice versa, or the pictures on the walls, or anything that I can bring my attention to at the moment is colored by the fact that I am where I am. Conversely, I've been in places that have traditionally been things that give me a great sense of peace and serenity, and I found that I feel a little off-center. Well, I came to realize that I'm bringing myself every place. I'm meeting myself every place I go. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute, because it is the very warp and woof of what I want to talk about this morning. You're going to meet yourself everywhere you go. It's been said that relationships are mirrors, and I believe that. We choose people that complete us in ways that we may not even understand. Subconsciously, we are reaching out all the time, and when we meet somebody that is reaching in a similar direction, a connection is formed, and it is sort of like a circuitous form of energy that pulls us together. The outer, the attraction, etc., that's all part of it too, but we're also talking about how we agree, how we get on, so to speak, with the other. That's true in any relationship. We look for points of commonality. Some people look for points where they can be disliking the same things or be perhaps negative about the same things or groups of people. I think most of us look for commonalities for the positive. We're in here. We believe in an affirmative way of living. You know, it's been said that the real music is the space between the notes, that it's the space between the bars that holds the tiger in the cage. And that was a little bit of a brain bender to me. So I had to go back and see, well, what does that mean? And then I thought for a minute, if there wasn't space between the notes and there wasn't the space between the bars, then there wouldn't be anything to contain. In other words, there has to be a stop and a start and a stop and a start, a place, and that's a duality that's here on the physical, but it's not present on the spiritual, because we can invoke prayer anytime. We don't have to knock, knock and say, God, are you home? Can you listen to me for a minute? We can speak anytime, any place, anywhere in prayer. Our lives can become a prayer. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. The space that I'm talking about that's most important is not between the notes necessarily, the music, or even the bars of a cage in the zoo. It's the gap or the space between your thoughts. And it's in that place that I feel your real self resides, not the one that's acquired or the one that you've decided you are based on what you've gone through. Because many people go through similar things and they become different than maybe you are. You'll see that some have decided to grow, some have decided to stand still, some have decided to get very negative. Maybe the same thing you've gone through, they've done it differently. Why? What is it, that unknown quantity in a person, that when presented with the idea of growth will either be excited by the prospect or scared by it? I want to offer to you, it's the image that we carry of ourselves. It's the things that we think over and over and over again, almost automatic. No, it's not almost. It is automatically. And we go to good counselors, therapists, hypnotists, analysts, really to interrupt these patterns of thought. But I want to offer a way today to interrupt the patterns of thought that you can do on your own. Now, I don't pretend to be better at this than, say, Eckhart Tolle or Krishnamurti or these wonderful gentlemen that I've studied that deal in the power of the present. But I have some ideas that have worked for me, and I'd like to share them with you. One of the things that I appreciate about Dr. Thurman Fleet in concept therapy is the idea that he has, or the group has the idea that the conscious mind is a circle. There's a circle, and the conscious mind is here, the subconscious is there, and then there's a little circle for the body. And what Dr. Fleet said was that we treat symptoms and not people. And I think that what we do with our lives is we treat our predominant thoughts, not our new ones, or the ones we could embrace. In other words, when we say we want to change and we really mean it, who is it that wants to change? Is it the self that has been suffering? If that's the case, you're going to get more of it. There's got to be something that interrupts that pattern and that flow, that habitual way or modality of looking at yourself. And one of the best ways to do that is to meditate. And I know all too well how hard it can be, because my mind jumps, and I heard from other people it jumps all over the place before it settles down. And sometimes I fall asleep when I'm doing it, but that's the best, because then I get answers many times in a dream state. But that's also a subject for another message. Whatever calms you down, whatever grounds you, whatever it is that gives you that feeling that I am inspired, I can be remade, I can think differently, that's the best place for you to be. The outer will only mirror the inner. So I found that people who are very much energetic and high energy, and they would say that they're type A, they like to go to places like this trail back here, or to places that are calm in nature and you know, serene. Interestingly enough, those people who have called themselves introverted and shy sometimes like to go where there's a whole lot of people and a whole lot of energy and everything's just vibrating at a high intensity. Why is that? What are we particularly scared of inside ourselves? That's what I want to ask of each one of us today. I don't believe that we're supposed to live fearful of ourselves or others. And I will repeat, God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind, and all that that entails. I take the gospel writers at their words. I take it to being exactly what it says. So if we want to find this gap between our thoughts to enable us to have greater peace of mind, greater energy, a new life, whatever it may be, how best to do that? Besides meditation, besides a lot of practices you may already do. Well, one way is to realize that the self that you are is an amalgamation of opinions that you have. Marcus Aurelius said years ago, everything that happens is within your opinion about it, and you can withdraw that opinion at any time you choose. Joseph Murphy in Power of Your Subconscious Mind said, refuse to have an opinion about what happens. You don't need to run out and say, I think this or I think that about whatever's going on, especially if it disturbs your equilibrium or your peace of mind. Sometimes it's best to just sit back and be quiet, because we really don't know always what's going on or what's being healed in any given moment. We see one prism of something that's happening in front of us, and we think we've got the whole idea based on the fact of what we've thought about similar things in the past. What I'm saying is we're bringing a lot of stuff with us from the past that may not serve us well right now and certainly doesn't help us see rightly right now. And to me, to see rightly is to see the truth. God has certain principles that I believe in that were laid down a long time ago. Good, omnipresent, omniscient, and that we as his children or her children are powerful creators. I'm here to help facilitate you creating the very best life you can. And the best life that you can is one that's free of as many things that hinder you from what you want to be as possible. If you're comfortable with the way things are, that's fine. I'm not here to try and proselytize the idea that you have to believe my way. I have my way, you have your way, as it was said in Buddhism, the way doesn't exist, because while it does, there's many, many ways of getting there. So I think we should probably rephrase that a little, but I'm not one to contradict the Buddha, believe me. But there is, you know, the idea that men sit in a circle and suppose, and the secret sits in the center and knows. And so we want to get to that knowing place. We want to interrupt that flow that tells us, this is the sort of person I am. This is the way it is for me, and it is closed in this for me because it's always been this way. My mother didn't do it any differently. My father didn't do it any differently. And who am I to go above that? The opinion that we entertain in ourselves, and notice how it makes you feel after you voice that. When you say something negative about yourself or someone else, while it may feel good for a moment, it's an energy drain. It slows you down. I'm saying that the greatest number of opinions we can shed about things would be very, very wise to do, because things happen independently of what we think. The best thing we could do if something upsets us is to send a prayer of safety or concern towards it. Or if something that we like, we send a prayer of joy or thanksgiving. But we don't hold on to these ideas about, I need to have an opinion about this, and I need to state it, and somebody's got to listen to me. Most people, all people, really have their own opinions too, and they may agree with yours. But you're still always at choice, and you can always choose to process things differently regardless of where you are and regardless of what you're going through. I've seen it done in hospitals. I've seen it done in churches. I've seen it done in living rooms. I'm one who did it because I made a decision that I couldn't stand to have this particular situation in my life anymore. It was a form of impatience. You see, if somebody says to you, "You're a pink elephant," you're going to laugh at that because you know that's not true. They can say that all they want, and we'll think they're probably a little bit off balance. But let somebody walk up to you and say, "You're pretty impatient, aren't you?" The bristle happens, because what happens is they've touched something in here, something you don't want to maybe admit. Or somebody actually says, "You don't deal very well sometimes with your children, it seems like. The inner reaction is not the best." And this, wait a minute, I'm a good mother, I'm a good father. We immediately get defensive, which proves the point that we're holding these ideas and we're vibrating to what the other person is saying. Because if we weren't that way, then it wouldn't matter. We could laugh off the pink elephant. We could laugh off somebody says, "You're a car, you're a truck," any of these silly things. But the things that sort of tingle us are the things that we entertain perhaps as true about ourselves. And we step back and draw a line and say, "I am not." And we defend. And out of defense usually comes an attack. And the other person comes back to reinforce the fact of what they said is true. And you're starting a whole new circle of energy that's got to be dissipated some way. And you run to a therapist or hypnotist or whatever it is and say, "Help me get rid of this. I don't want it." I'm saying you can do it yourself. Now, I don't mean that you should not avail yourself of these wonderful services, but I mean it's going to be easier when you go to the professional, if that's your choice, to have done some of this work on your own. By realizing that, truly, all is opinion, and it's within your power to change your opinion, including the one you entertain about yourself, about your world. I know in my case, when somebody said I was impatient, I said, "Well, I think I do pretty well," and I stopped myself, and I thought about I-10. I thought about how it is when I come up here and I want to sit on the horn. You know, ministers... I knew some ministers like to say they're above all that. I'm still working on it. I really am. And there are things about the mailman come a certain time. I want that. It comes 2 hours late. And I begin to get a little antsy. And I've got to remind myself of what I teach and what I believe so much in. You see, if something is true about you and somebody speaks it, it's going to feel wonderful. If something is false about you, but you still have it inside you, it's not going to feel great, but you can realize that you can change it. So if somebody says, "You're impatient," and I say, "You know, tell me how." And they lay it out and say, "You know, you kind of complain a lot about 10 or whatever it is," and say, "Yeah, and I can work on that." Instead of saying, "I don't know what you're talking about. I'm very patient." Well, you don't know what I'm going through right now. Just look back. And all of a sudden, I'm starting something that goes all the way back years ago to defend something right now that if I just accept and say, "I'll try to do better," we could stop it. How much drama do we create for ourselves and each other? And think about that in a large way, a national way, a worldwide way. And we ask God to give us peace. Really. He's given us the minds and the desires to make peace if we really wanted it. I contend that we like conflict because it gives us a false sense of aliveness. If I can march out somewhere with my fist held high, I have an identity. And my identity is a crusader against this, for this, and make my opinion very well known instead of quietly and confidently living the truth that I know is and affirming it. You see, I think the best way to change society is to change yourself. And I think the best place to be is in the present. It's a gift. That's why they call it the present. This is the best gift you're going to get from God, which is the ability to take your life in this moment and make it what you want to be. Because I've got some other news that's kind of mind-bending. The only time you can live is right now. What I said 5 minutes ago is as over as the Peloponnesian War. And what I'm going to do 5 minutes from now, I have no idea. I have a pretty good thought about it, but I'm not exactly sure. So, as Alan Watts calls it in The Wisdom of Insecurity, this is the shaky ground of being that we stand on in the presence. But you see, I feel that it's not shaky to me because I claim the principles of truth, that God is good, everywhere present, omniscient, guides me, and leads me in the ways of right decision and of right thought, and lets me see through the lens that I should when I take my ego out of the way, when I take this self that has so many filters from so many things, and I can part the veil and see clearly. That comes more and more and more as you practice. It becomes a little easier to do. But it really is, in a certain way, signifying the death of the ego, the death of the things that caused you the most problems in your lifetime. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have an opinion or you should enjoy life, nothing like that. I'm saying that when those things, those opinions, those ideas, those hard-set opinions affect you in your health, your mental health, physical health, your relationships, it may be time to re-examine how you're processing the reality that's presented to you. You know, a wife was having an argument with a husband, and she looked at the husband and said, "If I agreed with you, we'd both be wrong." You see, that's how some people approach the idea of taking a look at themselves. It's like, I don't want to give up too much here because this is me, and if I give up a lot of it, who am I going to be? And I don't know, and all the mushrooming ideas of uncertainty and doubt and fear that accompany change. But I have another bit of news. Change is going to happen whether we like it or not. I've been reminded of that personally for the past 7 months and really right now. Changes happen, and it is, I guess you would say, the grace that we go through those changes that make them positive or negative. And when I say grace, I don't mean a divine gift, although that's wonderful. I mean a feeling of being open and non-resistant, and as they say in the way of the Tao, to understand that you're one with the force of this world that moves this world, that nothing human is alien to you, that you're not really going through something that nobody ever has, and that basically the human story is not new. It's been repeated thousands of times over many years. It may be new to you right now. It may be new to me. But there really is nothing new under the sun. There's just new ways of handling the things that have always disturbed people, not only us, but from way back. The present is what I want to tell you the best place to be. That's the place you're going to do your living. That's the place you're going to do your healing. And that's the place you're going to do your loving. It's wonderful to have memories. We all have wonderful memories that we cherish. That's fine. And we all have goals, at least for the future, that we want to be happy, at least, or we want to do something. That's fine to have that, so long as you're not owned by that, so long as you're not so prepossessed by that that you can't enjoy right now. That's the big gift. That's. I'll go further and be a little cheesy. The present is a gift for you to unwrap. I mean, it really is. It's so fresh, it's so new, it's right in front of you, but it's so, you're accustomed to it. I'm accustomed to it because it presents itself at every moment. We can't flee from it. Now, if I can bring in the scripture, whether can I go and flee from your presence? If I abide in heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there too. And that's from a psalm. The psalmist was talking about, I can't leave your wonderful, loving presence, God, nor do I want to. So remember that when you're embracing the new present, think about the presence that's with you as you make those decisions in favor of living differently, of a new life, of catching yourself repeating things that you don't want to have happen again. We are on automatic pilot. In many ways, we just walk in the oldness of life. Scripture enjoins us to walk in newness of life. It wasn't just about getting the healing in the Bible. It wasn't just about that, even though that's where a lot of the stories ended. I want to know also what they did after that healing, how it worked, what that new life looked like. And it inspired so many men who wrote this that said, in him was life, the newness of life. In him we lived and moved and we have our being. You see, it's all the way that we read it. It's all the way we look at it and interpret it. A fearful person, an angry person, can look at the most beautiful thing and make it ugly. But a happy, joy-filled person can look at something ugly and find the beauty in it. That's what we're called on to do. It's real easy to be happy when things go all just the way we want them. It's a little more difficult when things are falling apart around you and you're wondering how you're going to walk the next step. And you say, I'm in the present. That moment was past. I'm going to choose again. Of course, the miracle says choose once again. And that this moment, right here, right now, is where you live. This present moment. So I ask you to make the most of your present. I've thrown out some different ideas for each of you to use or discard as you wish. But remember this, the dailiness of life, the monotony, we'll say, of it, is only that way because we choose to think about it that way. It's in our opinion, it's in our ability to make a new opinion about ourselves and about what we're going through. Those opinions count a whole lot. The opinions we have about things out here usually are there to reinforce a sense of being right or a sense of security. And I submit that the real security and the real righteousness you'll feel is when you can embrace the possibility for you, go through it, process it in your mind, bring yourself back to the present and say, I am happy and fearless and ready to walk into this next moment. You're not asked to walk 100 miles at one time. You're asked only to take the next step in front of you. And you can take the next step in front of you and the one after that and the one after that in a wonderful sense of grace and in a wonderful way of embracing the possibilities that the present offers you every single moment of the day. I wish for you all every wonderful thing this week, and that you go out of here refreshed, renewed, and with the idea that you can choose once again to embrace God's wonderful gift of the present and his presence to us. And so it is.